Ladies and gentlemen, the legacy of classical Greece has always functioned as a more or less considerable component of collective human experience. Today, it continues to stimulate the interest in almost every domain of modern thought and the instructive curiosity of ordinary people all over the world. Especially the visual part of classical heritage, material remains, works of art, images of myth and literature, plays an important role in the way we experience the classical past because of the power of images held in our era. But what exactly is this classical heritage we experience today? Material evidence as well as ancient literary sources have to be interpreted in order to give us a concrete notion of the classical. The interpretation of the classical, an unending process since its creation, cannot be as of any historical evidence, we have heard about that yesterday and today, absolutely objective, as it depends at any time on the philosophy and the experiences of the interpreter. So both the quality and the limits of interpretation of the classical world today, a wide range of issues concerning different areas of life. In the domain of scholarship, archaeology rediscovers pieces of evidence from the past and makes every effort objectively to reconstruct history in accordance with the remains and in correlation with its resources if they exist. Modern historical archaeology tries to offer a sober synthesis of all available data about the classical past, a modern story about it which aspires to be objective history and can at any time be modified on the basis of new evidence. Nevertheless, modern scholarly interpretations are not always sufficiently factual. They are frequently influenced by theoretical, social, national, nationalistic, or personal conceptions current at the time of the interpretation. The latter conceptions aim sometimes to impress and entertain the public rather than offer serious knowledge. Interpretations produced under such influences offer temporary creations, stories rather than history. An example of such stories is the case of the pyramidal ruins of ancient buildings in the Argolid. After archaeometric measurements, they have been interpreted as real small pyramids, tombs, or astronomical watchtowers built early in the third millennium before Christ. Archaeological study, on the other hand, dates them to the fourth and third centuries before Christ and interprets them as the remains of roadside guardhouses, the second image you see on the screen, guardhouse towers with a high tapering base. The character and antiquity ascribed to these constructions by scholars who are attracted to the first option offers to modern Greek pride a welcome story. Locating the invention of parallel use of the famous Egyptian type of building in Greece. But this story contributes nothing to history so long as it ignores the strong archaeological argument. A scholarly archaeological activity that is increasingly gaining ground in our own day and deserves to be mentioned in this brief overview is the conservation and presentation of material cultural remains with the aim of offering historical knowledge to a broad public through visual data. In countries like Greece, this work managed by interdisciplinary teams of archaeologists, architects, engineers, and others mostly involves classical monuments. Strict international rules are already in place concerning the extent of restoration that is historically permissible. The intervention of the present in the making of this modern historical image of the monuments is nevertheless again in the nature of this activity. Restoration sometimes risks producing a falsified image. This, for example, is the case, is a very well-known case, with the Palace of Minos in Knossos. On the basis of poor remains of the lower parts and the decoration of the building complex, as you see up on the left on the screen, upper floors and a full decoration were reconstructed, as you see on the right side, following Evans's intuitional ideas of what they should look like. Although we do not know what they really looked like, the image of these modern ruins of Knossos, a personal story of Evans, exercises a considerable influence on our perception of Minoan civilization. Restoration is a law today, up to the point where scholars are absolutely sure of what the monument originally looked like. But there are many problems. What should the percentage and the quality of the new material added to what has survived be in order to restore a comprehensible image of the ruin? Is the image which we create and which has never existed up to the present a falsification, or rather it is a further phase in the life of the monument? If the monument preserves elements of different periods of history, as for example is the case with an ancient Greek temple converted into a Christian church later, to what extent can one preserve and present each phase, or on the basis of what criteria should one attribute more weight to one or some of them? For instance, the original phase, the best preserved, or the one connected with important events. Should we avoid interpreting restoration, I mean restoration that offers an interpretation, or is it that by making the monuments in a scientific way broadly readable, we contribute to their preservation and to the revelation of their historical content to society, justifying their existence? Discussion about all these problems is still on way. A second stream, and can be continued here, of course. A second stream through which classical antiquity remains active in modern life is its function as a fund of human experience and inspiration. This interactive, creative approach to the classical heritage, reforming or studying inherited images and ideas of the past and using them as vehicles through which to express modern experiences and needs, creates continually modern versions of or subjectively motivated approaches to, in other words, modern stories about historical reality. Despite the fact that this activity often risks distorting the historical conscience of modern society, acquired as a result of scholarly effort, one has to admit that this interaction is as important for life as is the knowledge tied to scholarship and constitutes an essential part of the notion of the classical. How unexpectedly wide the range of modern experiences seeking expression through classical archetypes can be is manifested by the modern hit of the Percy Jackson series of books based predominantly on Greek mythology, or by an ode written early this year by the British poet laureate Carol Ann Duffy for England's leading football player, David Beckham. Beckham tore his Achilles tendon and was going to miss the World Cup in June. Duffy imagines him as the Greek hero Achilles, who was dipped as a baby by his mother Thetis in the river Styx and became invulnerable except for his heel, the part of the body she held him by. Modern visual arts provide an abundant creation of works narrating actual stories molded in classical forms. I cite here as examples the interpretations of the creator concerning a sculpture and a building. The Czech Anna Chromy writes about her Europe and the Bull. This work was exposed in the gardens of the National Museum last year. She tells us, "With my rape of Europe, I intend to give this tale a contemporary significance. In my sculpture, the god in the form of a white bull has already drowned, and a charitable wave of history brings the princess back to our shores, where her crystal ball predicts a radiant future for our continent." We need these optimistic visions in our current situation. And the designers of the Sackler Library in Oxford, successor of the Ashmolean Library, explain that the entrance of the building left is based upon the Doric temple of Apollo at Basse in the Peloponnese, first excavated by Charles Robert Cockerell, the man who designed the Ashmolean Museum. You see the modern story. Another very influential branch of art production, which was already addressed today, namely theater and cinematography, deals frequently with classical antiquity. The reincarnation, however, of images of ancient life in our modern world is not without problems. Intense criticism is often expressed of modern theatrical interpretations of ancient tragedies and comedies. We saw yesterday the discussion between Nash and Stein. Comments on Peter Stein's production of Aeschylus Orestia, for example, argue that in Agamemnon and Hoi Fori, the two works of the trilogy, the hopes for a grand drama were fulfilled. But in the Eumenides, it all went horribly wrong, I cite, because it soon became obvious that Stein was deliberately playing Eumenides for laughs, while Eumenides is not a funny play. It is a serious examination of the debate between the two standards of justice, one based on equity and one on revenge. A debate as relevant today as it was 2,500 years ago. On the other hand, the 2010 production of Aristophanes' Acharnis in Epidavros was described by spectators as Acharnis without Aristophanes. A similar problem troubles cinematography. Here, the demand for originality, commerciality, and light-hearted entertainment leads frequently to stories which have nothing or very little to do with the classical characters and situations they allegedly reproduce. An indicative example is the recent hit of Hercules and Xena, which has been presented as a renaissance of ancient Greek myth, although it is loosely based on classical tales mixed with Oriental, Egyptian, and medieval elements. It is of great interest to explore the ethics of artistic interpretation in this important field of theater and film. One cannot begrudge anyone's drawing from the classical tradition the elements that they find suited to their creative imagination and reshaping them in any direction their vision leads them. On the contrary, one would say that this is desirable. In the end, the ever-active, unbound power of inspiration is the essence of the classical. On the other hand, a clearer distinction between heritage and creation, between history, our modern stories, is imperative. Shouldn't people whose work is inspired by a classical play or a mythical image, but strays too far from it, abstain from entitling their work with the ancient writers or hero's name? Or at least, should they not name it in such a way that makes the modern different version they themselves have created clear? Of many other fields of modern life addressed in my written contribution to the dialogues, which you find in the internet, in which the classical legacy plays a significant role, one last word must be added here concerning the use of the classical heritage by modern societies in defining social identities. Small local societies feel the need to link their identity to glorious moments of history. National identities, especially the one of Greece, are shaped with reference to classical antiquity. Even broader cultural groups, and by that I mean the notion of Europe or the notion of Western world, define themselves by referring in a greater or lesser degree to the legacy of classical Greece. But historically false stories can also be produced in this respect. Thus, for example, the inhabitants of Caria in the Peloponnese, a small village in the Peloponnese, erected in their village a full-scale copy of the Porch of Caryatids on the Acropolis of Athens, with the intention of proving the importance of their ancestry. This is an unsuccessful, completely unsuccessful historical story. The Erechtheion as a work of art has nothing to do with the history of the village. Even the ancient female figures serving as architectural supports, inspired according to tradition by the female worshippers of Artemis in the ancient town of Caryae, have nothing as an artistic invention to do with the past of the village. Classical antiquity is today understood in Greece as a major component, still as a major component of the national identity, but not anymore as a hereditary gift. It is understood rather as the experience of a language with an extraordinary richness of notions, which developed uninterruptedly down the centuries, as an experience of living in the same places in which ancient Greek culture developed and among its remains, as an experience of being the natural guardians of the multitude of these internationally praised material remains, and as an experience of an education strongly influenced by this environment. I try, as you see, to define this valuable component of modern Greek identity. The current Greek passport, on which pages, on whose pages faint representations of monuments illustrate different periods of the country's history, show the modern conception of national identity in Greece. And yet, concerning the current image of modern Greek national identity outside Greece, and generally the perception of the classical worldwide, the cartoons which appeared recently in the international press commenting on the difficult financial situation of Greece lead us to two interesting ascertainments. Two examples out of many, which you see on the screen, will explain what I mean. The first is a front cover of the German magazine Focus, representing the Aphrodite of Milo, draped in the flag of modern Greece and extending her hand in the characteristic gesture of a beggar. The famous statue of the ancient Greek goddess stands here for modern Greece, asking for money from her partners. The second example is a cartoon under the title Greece in Debt. The discus thrower of the famous ancient sculptor Myron has in his hand a euro instead of the discus. He throws the euro discus out of the window of a classical featured building, which he resides, after having broken the glass pane. Outside the window, earlier throws have accumulated a pile of coins. The meaning is evident. Modern Greeks who live among the remains of classical Greece and experience its precious heritage have betrayed it in the current situation and have, and have foolishly squandered the resources they once had. Two statements can be made on the basis of such publications. First, in the mind of the broad international lay public, there still exists a latent feeling that the classical past represents the main component of modern Greek identity. One should study this phenomenon, on the one hand, in relation to the international criticism that Greece places too much weight on its classical past, and on the other, to the efforts of Greeks today to balance the different components of their identity, that is, the history, their history, and their recent and present creations. The second statement, and by that I finish, is that the perception of the classical as an ideal paradigm of life, which in the present situation, so the cantons imply, Greeks have ignored, is still vividly alive in the international community. It is the same feeling as the one revealed in the broad symbolic use of classical images in publicity campaigns all over the world, aiming to advertise merchandise as purportedly possessing enduring value. Our modern world is ready to profit from the classical heritage and its diachronic values. We just have to make this legacy function in its real nature as a fund of experience, well documented and responding to actual preoccupations and needs at any time. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Lambrinoudakis, and all the other speakers of the first part of our session. And now we have a coffee break up to 11:15.
Sorry, excuse me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue, and we have already got lots of questions, and so I would like to postpone the more general questions to the final discussion, but there are smaller questions and more special questions. And so I would ask my colleagues to answer them. There are four questions I have chosen.